Okay. Here we are in the new normal. Thank you, Reggie. Team player, Reggie the producer, today for coming down to the studio to record the podcast. I don't know what I joke. I know I joke with you, pal, but thank you so much for doing this because I don't believe I've missed a week. And there was a question whether we'd be able to do this, given the lockdown situation we're in. And I just wanted to say thank you. So next submarine sandwich is on me. And you can eat in there all you want, as long as the needles are bumping and moving and the microphone is hot. And we can do this. We will do it. I'm a stickler. I had almost perfect attendance in high school in 4 years. I don't think I missed a day in college. And when there's a curtain to go up that I'm expected to be there, or a job that I'm expected to do, or whatever it is, I show up. And I want to thank you for doing the same thing too, Reggie. Hopefully we will be able to leave the house when we record this next week. Who knows what other regulations may be implemented against a behavior. But for right now, we were able to do this, and I want to thank you. So let's get started. Because, of course, we're going to be, once we get started here, we're going to be celebrating episode 200. We had to do that, right? So thank you. Thumbs up. Good job. It's always good to work with people that are on your side and think like you, and I appreciate that. So thank you, Reggie. Here we go. You ready? Write it down in the book. Special one. Episode 200. Not sure what that means, but it's 200. We like round numbers like that, don't we? Star, smile, and especially during these days, huh? Strong. All right, let's have some fun. I think that's still allowed. There's not much around, so let's create some. Here we go. Ready, Reggie? 3, 2, 1. Welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNplus.com, or you can find this podcast wherever you find your favorite podcast. And don't forget to subscribe and rate this podcast, whatever platform you find it at. But most important, wherever you find it, whatever you do, in the course of your day, and I assume you have a little free time on your hands these days, right? Tell your friends. Your friends are looking for something to do, something to listen to, something to brighten their days and lift their spirits, and maybe even teach them a thing or two. That's Bill Cosby. And if you're not careful, you just might learn something. Jello pudding. Tell them you listen to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic every week, and that they should too. And especially during these crazy times that we're living in, your loyalty and your devotion to this podcast is much appreciated. I'm here. I'm doing it. I'm glad you're out there listening to it. In all this craziness, we need to find some foundational parts of our lives that we can count on, and you can count on me. If there's a new week, there's a new Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Welcome to episode 200. It's certainly not the episode I would have thought it would be. Over the last week or so, or actually longer than that, I was thinking about, okay, so how do I make episode 200 very special? Even though it's an arbitrary number, it's not as if, there won't be 250 and 300. I mean, that's the plan, right? But it's a milestone, you know, just like 100 is and 150. 200 does have some heft to it, does have some bulk to it. So I certainly was thinking about, doing something different or special, have a very special guest on, or do something crazy and wild that I don't do on a regular basis. And as I mentioned on a previous podcast, even maybe I believe the last one, 199, as we were approaching 200, I was thinking, well, do we make such a big deal about it? Because of the fact that I was using the Walter Payton philosophy, the great Chicago Bears running back who, for most of his career, especially during the days when the overdone and, you know, look at me kind of touchdown dances and other celebrations began. They really started in the 70s during Walter Payton's time when running backs, wide receivers, whoever would score a touchdown, started dancing and not just spiking the ball, which was the common thing at the time to score a touchdown. They started to dance and do moves and pose and things like that. It was the beginning of the hot dog era, which now is commonplace, but that was called being a hot dog. And Payton was always a very straightforward meat and potatoes kind of player. There were a few times when he flashed his flair, but for the most part, he would just, you know, if there was a real big touchdown or something that he really fought for, he would spike it and spike it hard. But for the most part, he would just hand the ball to the referee. And a lot of people, reporters would ask him, geez, in these days now of everybody kind of making a big celebration about a touchdown, why do you just hand the ball to the referee in a very kind of nonchalant, uncelebratory manner? And he said, when I get to the end zone, I want to make it look like I've been there before and I'm coming back again. And I thought that was very cool and very classy. And it's like, hey, you know, we mostly celebrate things that that never happened before. We make a big deal because they may not happen again. That's how we kind of celebrate these special occasions that don't happen all the time. And in Walter Payton's mind, hey, I'm going to come back in the next 5 minutes or 10 minutes when we get the ball back and score another touchdown. So I'll be back. And I'll be back again and again and again. So no need to have crazy celebrations. I'll be back. And I know I'll be back. So I love the coolness of that. I love the confidence of that. And I love the focus and determination of that. And so I was saying in this mindset of this 200th, maybe I'll just do a regular podcast. Because, yes, we'll say something about 200. But, you know, I'll be back for 201. And 202 and who knows 300 or who knows how long we'll continue to do the podcast. But so yes, 200, a nice number, an impressive number. And if you have been around since the beginning in May of 2016, when this podcast began 200 podcasts ago, if you've been around for all 200 of them, I thank you really with all my heart, with my sincere thank you. I've been here for all 200, and I'm glad that some of you have as well. And the great part is that if you haven't, you can. And now, especially in our lockdown society is currently upon us and may be with us for a while, you certainly have some time to catch up on some things you've never, you've always put aside or haven't done in a long time. Especially around the house. So if you need to catch up on your Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic podcast, now is the time. We are the official quarantine podcast. I just got that designation. I just heard back from the quarantine board, and we are among the first to be quarantine-approved podcasts. We are one of the best quarantine podcasts there are. That's not me. That's the official quarantine board that gave us that honor. So thank you to the board. And but as I said, now you have a lot of time. So if you want to, don't be afraid. Go to WGNplus.com. Go in the podcast section. They've sort of reworked the website now. It's much more clear and much more bold in terms of its font and its navigation abilities there. So just go to the podcast area right toward the top, and then you'll see a nice listing of all the podcasts there. And then just hit Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. It's in the first level. It's in the first column there, and you will find all previous podcasts. So how cool is that? And now we could say all previous, well, 199. And you'll have listened to this, so you will have then, if you go on back and do that, you know, you have finished all 200, and you will have done a very good, you'll get an A on your assignment. I usually say all I ask for is an hour a week to listen to the podcast. But that was back in the old days when people actually had something to do and had a lot of, and were going out of their homes and going to jobs and doing, you know, other types of activities, athletic activities, entertainment activities, cultural activities, volunteer activities, when we actually had busy lives. So all I asked for at that time was 1 hour a week. But now I'm going to be a little selfish, and I'm going to actually, hopefully, as I said, help you fill your time. If you're walking around going, geez, it's kind of boring here. I finally cleaned the house. I finally went through the junk drawer. I finally painted the cabinets or whatever, those nagging kind of small around the house projects that you've always wanted to do but didn't have time for. I'm sure within a couple of weeks, you will be done with those and more, and you will need some something to fill your time. And hopefully you enjoy this podcast enough that you will go back and start from podcast number one back in May of 2016 and work your way all the way up to this one, 200. Or maybe you already up to date. If you are, then rest assured you will have more to listen to. So here we are at 200. As I said, my point is circumstances ultimately dictated what I would do for episode 200. Just a week ago, in fact, I believe I recorded last week's podcast on Wednesday. And that really was when that was the last day before life in America changed overnight. And it is still in a state of flux, and it will be, I believe, for quite a while. And so it's an odd time. I don't really think, even if I wanted to, I don't think that I, you know, with so much going on, so much uncertainty, a good amount of anxiety and fear in some people. We're all being conscientious and cautious and preventive. And so I don't know if it was really appropriate to celebrate the 200th podcast. But at the same time, I also believe that the 200th podcast will still be memorable without a big special to-do about it, because of the fact that it will be remembered, hopefully, sooner than later. We'll go back, you know, 3 or 4 months from now and say, wow, remember March of this year, how crazy things were? And my goodness, episode 200, accidentally or through the fates, landed right smack dab at one of the high points here of this entire new normal of in shelter, or is it shelter in? I don't even know. That's a new term now that we're starting to hear. Every day there's some new term. I mean, think about it. 3 weeks ago, did you ever hear of the term social distancing? Not really. Now it's the first things on our mind. And this COVID-19, it was floating around. And, you know, 3 months ago, the idea of this coronavirus, we heard about some virus that was happening in China somewhere. It felt very far away. It felt very vague. For those who were paying attention and giving any kind of, seriousness to it, I'll admit I wasn't, it's one of those things that you say, oh, you know, it's going to be like the bird flu and the swine flu and MERS and SARS and Ebola. Yes, there was some concern. Yes, there were even some fatalities that happened. But it's really not a worldwide pandemic or epidemic or all these things. And give me a break. And there's all this, you know, sky is falling down kind of thing. Well, wow. Did COVID-19 prove to be a formidable foe this time? COVID-19 proved not to be some swine flu or some bird flu or some SARS or MERS or Ebola or Zika or any of those viruses that we've heard about over the last several years that potentially had the ability or the fear that this would happen. But now we got one. And we will forever remember COVID-19. And so this is episode 200, the COVID-19 episode. So it wound up episode 200 will stand out for a reason, not the one that I or maybe others, you know, listeners had expected, but it will be, because this one really is happening right at a time where the wound is still fresh here. In a week, and now when this is posted, it will be a week and a half or so, but almost overnight, it really started the seriousness of this in the United States, when all the dominoes began to fall very quickly and in a dizzying pace, very swiftly, in terms of major events and sporting seasons and workplaces, and later on, entertainment venues and restaurants and bars and almost everywhere. It really started when the NBA made the announcement that they were suspending their season because one of their players tested positive for the coronavirus. And when that announcement came, it just sent shockwaves through all of our established institutions, both private, well, not even both, in several, private, corporate, public, governmental, you name it. When a major corporation, and that's what the NBA, that is worth billions of dollars and entertains millions of people on an almost a nightly basis, decides that it is not safe for it to go on in these days when this virus is spreading, not only for the safety of the audience, for the patrons who come to watch the event, 20,000 on a normal night, but also for the participants. And when the NBA said, we're suspending, the dominoes began to fall. That's when the NHL, the hockey league, then suspended theirs, because they're the other major sport that's currently in season. And it wasn't too far after that that Major League Baseball, just in its spring training, beginning its spring training with an eye in a couple of weeks to start the season, because now even baseball season starts in March as opposed to April. So suddenly baseball had to confront that. And then they not only canceled their spring training, but they also said there would be a delay of their season, and they've continued to push that back. First they said mid-April, and now they're talking probably late April or early May. And if that even happens. But wow, wasn't it crazy at the speed that this happened? I mean, life in America changed. I believe it was March 11th. That's when you can put a pin in it. I believe it was March 11th or 12th when the NBA made their announcement. And after that, it just seemed like all these other institutions and government and the private sector and the public sector and everything were waiting for someone to make a move. They all knew that they had to, but no one really wanted to be the first one because it looked like maybe they were being cowardly. Now, the NBA, you know, I think they did it because out of pure necessity, one of their players tested positive. And soon after, several other players that came in contact with that player have announced that they have tested positive. So they did it for not just preventive reasons, getting ahead of the curve, they found that it's a necessity. But it seemed that once a longstanding and respected institution like the NBA, multi-million dollar, billion dollar business, decided to shut down, which was a huge decision, and I believe shocked a lot of people. Then everyone else, I think, turned around and took notice. And within a day, I believe the NHL decided to suspend the hockey season, and then baseball, and then once sports the sports of the day, even soccer here in the United States, once kind of the entertainment-ish sporting world stood up and said, you know, we attract 20,000 people. We can't have these kind of communal, you know, events where people are sitting right next to one another. They go against all the precautions that had been warned against, being 6 feet away from someone, not coughing or breathing on someone. Well, you know, anywhere in a major arena breaks every one of those rules. But wow, was it fast. American life changed. Now we're in the throes of it. Hopefully it changes back. But there's no, the thing that I think we have to be very cognizant of now is that yes, there's a hope that things will go back to normal, and we've been in similar situations in the last 20 years, going back to 9/11, where for a good couple of weeks, life changed. There were no airline flights out, and people stayed home for a while. A lot of anxiety, a lot of fear, terrorism. But as time went on, we overcame that anxiety and got back into our normal routines, but with a change. American life changed that day in terms of airport security, for certainly security in general, the idea of all of us being a little more vigilant is the word, being more vigilant in public. We could no longer be so casual, so nonchalant, so laissez-faire. If you saw a suitcase sitting somewhere, you were told in an airport or anywhere in a public place, you were told to report it. So there was a new normal, even though we went back to most of our regular routines in our lives, personal, professional, you know, hobbies, sports, whatever it is that make up our lives, all the different little aspects that we fill our lives with. We went back to all those. We went to concerts. We went to sporting events. We went to our jobs, whatever we had to do. We went back. But there was a difference. American life was different after 9/11. And same thing happened in, say, 2008, when there was the great economic collapse. You know, there was a great fear that our economic system was crumbling, and people lost great amounts of their personal wealth, or their real estate went down, and there was great fear and panic, and there were new rules again after that happened. Before that, mortgages were being handed out to anybody that applied for them. And we realized that there had to be more strict qualifications for that. We couldn't just be lending money or giving money out to people who had no way to pay this back, because we saw the consequences to the greater good when you continue to do that. So out of most of these catastrophic events, we do go back to our normal routines, but with a change. life does change. Rules do change in order to prevent what had just happened from happening again based on our own behavior. And so I think we should be prepared. I'm looking ahead. I'm assuming, you know, I'm a glass half full guy. And if you knew me, that you would be laughing at that. But I am going to be half full at this point, because I'm assuming that we will get through this, and that this coronavirus, like most viruses, will eventually die out. Now, whether it comes back again in the winter, and it's something that we will always have to prevent against, well, we'll see. But and we have had other viruses that have taken a toll on our population and throughout the world, throughout history. Black plague and tuberculosis and polio and HIV. And we have found ways to overcome those through hygiene, through health practices, through safe sex. We've changed our behaviors whenever these have come by. And so it will be interesting to see now. There is no doubt we are going through, for most of us in our lives, for the people that are alive today, this is unheard of. Yes, we have had some very serious events that have occurred here that have had some very serious consequences on our daily lives. But this is the first time that a true health crisis has affected the entire population. As I said before, we had HIV, and we found out that while it initially in the 80s when it first cropped up, was a devastating contagious disease, we soon found out what caused it, and we passed out that information to the people. And while HIV still exists, the numbers certainly have gone down, and the death toll has. We have found medicines to help at least not cure it at this point, but stifle it. And people are now living normal, quote-unquote, healthy lives with the HIV virus, which 30 years ago was unheard of. So when there's something like this, we attack it from the medical community, from a social community, giving people information of how to not contract this, and from a medical standpoint, to hope curb it or if not eliminate it. And we have succeeded in that. So here we have a new one. But for most people, there's been in this lifespan right now, in terms of a virus or a spreading disease, yes, we've had several of them. As I mentioned, many of them earlier. There were SARS several years ago, and MERS, and Zika, and Ebola, and bird flu, and swine flu that were happening in different pockets of the world that were causing great chaos and great illness, and in many cases, death, fatalities. But they were in small pockets in certain parts of the world, and ultimately they were overcome. The virus itself just died out and never reoccurred, or we were able to halt it through behaviors and medicines. We don't know what the end game is going to be on COVID-19 yet, of how it's going to stop. There is some hope, with fingers crossed, that like many flu-like viruses that seem to spread and gain strength in colder, drier weather, that as soon as the summer comes, when it's warmer and more humid, that perhaps this virus will not be able to survive that, or will lose its strength. So there is a hope that in the next couple of months, in May and in June, when temperatures almost double from what they are on a normal basis now in March, that hopefully this will go away like many of these other viruses. But right now, we don't know. As it stands right now, in late March, we really don't know. And we are, you know, our leaders in government, in at your job, whoever, you know, the CDC, the World Health Organization, the experts, they're offering guidelines and they're implementing measures about, you know, shutdowns and closings. And they're kind of announcing these in small increments. Last week, it was until the end of March. Now it's till the beginning of April. Some have said right off the bat, you know, closed, you know, until further notice. Others have pushed things back. The Kentucky Derby, for instance, which has always been run in May, first week of May, they're already saying they're going to run it in September. So they've actually catapulted over the summer and are looking to the fall as when a time when we'll be back to normal. So there are some institutions and organizations that are looking far, far ahead. Now, I believe our government and our workplaces, you know, I think they're trying to be cautious, because I think they're afraid that if they were to tell the general population that we're going to be in kind of a shutdown, social distancing, stay in your home, hunker down quarantine mode for the next 4 or 5 or even 6 months, that we would have chaos on our hands. We already have chaos on our hands. And some of us have coronavirus on our hands, which is causing this whole thing. I find it interesting how basically what we're finding is that at the end of the day, much of the world needs to be reminded of the personal hygiene habits that we were taught when we were 5 years old. I mean, we're talked about wash your hands when they're dirty, when you touch something that's kind of strange, or when you cough, cover your mouth, or when you sneeze, cover your mouth. I mean, social distancing is one thing, but some of the natural or the normal hygienic things that we're taught when we're five are the main reasons that this virus is spreading like it is. And so now we're in a new reality of social distancing and isolating and quarantining ourselves. And for whatever illogical, panic-stricken reason, we're also hoarding toilet paper. You know, I wouldn't mind. The toilet paper thing is so crazy to me, because I wouldn't mind if one of the symptoms of COVID-19 was some kind of attack of your digestive system or your bowels, where you say, wow, you know, you're going to be just like you're getting a colonoscopy in the preparation for a colonoscopy. I mean, this thing, you know, attacks the digestive system and you're going to be in the bathroom all the time. And so people say, hey, you know, I need toilet paper, because this has nothing to do with that end of our bodies. It's the top side. It's our nose and our mouth and our eyes where this comes into our bodies, and it affects not our digestive system. It attacks our respiratory system. I don't know where the toilet paper binging, but once again, we're in a binge society, right? We binge TV shows, and now we binge, apparently, toilet paper. Hopefully that one, that is such an overreaction and such a human illogical panic reflex, hopefully that one, you know, we start to realize how silly that is and we get back to normal on that one. Because how strange has it been to go to a grocery store, if you've gone to a grocery store in the last couple of weeks, and see not just one shelf, But four or five aisles completely empty and other aisles ravaged. It looks like Russia in the 70s with no bread on the shelves. I understand, you know, sadly, and I think I talked about this last week, we do have panic and fear bred into our genetic code. And so we do, overreact initially on everything. But the toilet paper one has been interesting. What I found interesting is that initially, you know, whenever there was kind of a big snowstorm or a big, tornado or something where people may have to be in their homes for a while, the kind of joke was, well, get the bread and get the milk, because those were staples in our lives, right? Bread and milk. You need bread, to make sandwiches and have toast, and you need milk because it's just, you know, we grew up in a milk society. Bread and milk, bread and milk, bread and milk. That was always, the rallying cry. It became kind of a joke. But now, I guess, in a more, health conscious and, vegan world that we're in, you know, bread has too many carbs. And milk is dairy. So you didn't hear about bread and milk. Now it was toilet paper. We don't want to stock up on carbs and dairy, even in the throes of an apocalypse. You know, we that's too much dairy and too many carbs. But toilet paper will take. And, there is such a thing as if you ever did run out of toilet paper, there are Kleenex, there is toilet paper, there is paper towels. And yes, I'm sure most of us all have towels at home. You know, that might not be the most preferred thing, but, you know, you could use a towel and then you can wash it. I thought that the bottled water run was crazy. Just because there's COVID-19 spreading around and you may be in your home for a while, does that mean your tap water's not going to work anymore? Those were illogical, fear-driven, emotional-driven reactions. So we're calming down a little bit, but I think we're having to face a new reality. And as I said before, my main point was there that it will be interesting now when the coronavirus hopefully goes away sooner than later. What will be the new takeaways that we will have learned from this? What residual effect will have surviving the coronavirus spread when we ultimately do? What will be the takeaways and what will be some of the residual effect of that? For instance, will we stop shaking hands as an accepted and formalized way of greeting people? A lot of people who have been germphobes have stopped shaking hands for several years, and you see the fist bumps and the elbow bumps. Some people have already begun to adopt the Chinese tradition of bowing. Maybe we may not bow at the waist, but we may just give a nod to somebody. Nice to meet you. But I don't know. Will the age-old tradition of shaking hands, and I must admit that I am one of those people. My first reaction when I meet someone new is to put my hand out. I was taught as a young kid that it's good to have a good handshake. You know, that was kind of what you were taught, especially if you were a man. You'll have a nice solid handshake. Well, I don't know. Is that just at this point now, given this, what we've seen, how fast a virus can spread to the point where it shuts down much of the world? As I said, this is unheard of. Even during 9/11, while America was shut down, the rest of the world wasn't. This is unprecedented. we are living in a historical time, in an historical time. It's not necessarily a good time, but it will be historic. This is a major event, and none of us have ever experienced this before. And those who are in charge, those experts don't even know what's next. This virus came out of nowhere. It's never been seen in the human body before. And the human body is having a hard time, obviously, trying to fight it. The immune system of our bodies, it's not prepared to fight this one at this time. Over time, it may find ways, or we may, with a vaccine, help the body fight it. But right now, Corona's winning. COVID-19 is winning. The human body does not know how to fight this off. But it will be interesting. So, as I said, will we be shaking hands after this? Because we're not shaking hands now. And if this goes on for 5 or 6 months, we just may forget about shaking hands. Or it may become a social faux pas. People will back away if you put your hand out. You may just, in your own mind, not even offer it anymore. It may be just a polite thing to do and a necessary thing to do as we become more aware of our surroundings. And ultimately, we come, if there's a lesson to be learned from this, and I've said this many times, and I didn't mean to be correct about it in this kind of a situation, but we are so fragile. Our species is so fragile. Look at what is taking down our society right now. We can amass huge armies. We can build devastating weapons. And none of those armies and none of those weapons have had the worldwide effect on the human species, on the everyday lives, as this spiky, minuscule little virus has. We are a fragile animal. We are a fragile species. Think about it. The animals aren't dying left and right. The animals are going about their business, probably wondering, what's all the fuss and where are all the people? What happened? It's almost like, you know, Planet of the Apes. We've got to run on this place. There's nobody on the streets. Some of our biggest cities look like ghost towns. We will remember this time. This has had an amazing and unprecedented effect on our daily lives. And it wasn't about wars, and it wasn't about weapons. It was about nature. I mentioned this when I came back from going to on a safari last October, and I talked about it here. The one thing I came away with was how we are members of the animal kingdom, and we are simply inhabitants on this earth. And we are members of the animal kingdom. I've said this for many years. I've always felt that term that was kind of popularized, at least, on T-shirts by the Hard Rock Cafe as a nice little marketing slogan, save the planet. I never believed in that. Because to me, that shows great arrogance on our part. We don't have any power to save this planet. And this COVID-19 should make us a little more cognizant of who we are on this planet, what our relationship is to this planet, and how fragile we are as a species. We do not have dominion over the animals and over the world. That is an ancient and misinformed and ignorant viewpoint. We are a part of this planet, and this planet, we do not have the power to save it. This planet does not want us to save it. It's arrogant for us to think that we can save it. This planet has been around for millions of years, long before we were around, and it will be around for millions of years after we are gone. Because most species on this planet throughout history come and go. And we know that. We found the fossils. We can go to a museum and we see the bones of dinosaurs, these monstrous animals who walk this earth, who no longer do. They certainly had to be walking around thinking that they ran this place when they were around. But something killed them off, whether it was the aftermath and the dust of an asteroid, whatever it was, they're not here anymore. And they were here, and they ruled this place. And that's how we act. Like, we rule this place. And when there is a tornado or a hurricane or a flood or an earthquake or now a pandemic, we are instantly reminded of how we are not running this place. There are other factors in this planet, on this planet, of which we are very vulnerable. And every time there's a hurricane, every time there's an earthquake, every time there's a wildfire, every time there's a tornado, every time there's a hurricane, we learn just how vulnerable we are. We are not going to save this planet. This planet's going to do whatever it needs to do to survive. This planet itself has a survival instinct. There's no question that there is climate change going on. No question. I'm not one of those people that say, well, no, there's no climate change. There's certainly climate change. We know it. We see. We've got evidence of what's happening. But there's climate change because the planet is reacting to what's happening on it by its inhabitants, meaning us. And certainly, we're contributing in very small ways to that. But you know what the biggest problem that's causing climate change? It's not flying in a plane. It's not carbon footprints. It's not coal. It's not emissions. It's our existence itself. There's 7 billion of us on the planet, and this planet has never had 7 billion people using up its regular resources of oxygen and carbon dioxide and water. And this planet is changing because there's 7 billion of us on here, and it's never had 7 billion. We say, well, look at the way the temperatures have risen over the last 25 years. Also, look at how the population has risen. We are not going to save the planet. This planet's going to save itself. The planet will do what it has to do, and if we get in the way, it will get rid of us. This planet has survived many, many natural catastrophes. We know there was an ice age. We've seen the Grand Canyon. We've seen the remnants of glaciers. I've seen them in Alaska and other places. We know there was an ice age. We've seen the remnants in person. We've seen the aftermath. This planet survived being, what, 75 or 80% covered in ice. Because for whatever reason, it felt it had to. So this planet will do whatever it needs to do to survive, and it will take out whatever it needs to survive. So don't say save the planet. If you want me to get involved, you should say, let's save humanity. Because that's what needs to be saved. The planet's going to be here. It's arrogant, it's human arrogance to say, save the planet, as if we had any way to do that. Save humanity? Now you got me. And let's talk serious about that. And this is what we're going through right now. This is something serious. You know, we're all hoping that this is going to end. We're assuming this is going to end. I hope it does. They won't have a vaccine for another 18 months. 18 months. I'm no math genius, but, you know, that's a year and a half. Are we prepared? Are we going to be willing to live like we are living in the last couple of weeks for the next 18 months? I certainly hope so, because we really don't have a choice. And we've seen people acting so irresponsibly, not taking this for real, not taking this for the serious risk that it imposes on all of us. This is a wake-up call for our society. I've always been kind of joking about the look at me and the narcissistic society, but now we're going to get a real look at what we're made of. I've always been joking about, could you imagine if today's society, with its self-absorbed viewpoints, its self-centered viewpoints, its narcissism, its selfishness, was ever in a world war like there was in the 40s, where people had to ration and think about the common good as opposed to themselves? Would we ever be able to survive? That was kind of my rhetorical question. Well, that rhetorical question now is coming to the forefront here. We have been so self-absorbed, even in the last 15 years, even in the last 12 or 13, thanks to the smartphone. We have become so self-absorbed, so narcissistic, so self-centered, so isolated, because we all look at this phone as opposed to looking around us at others. Well, now we have to. We've seen the younger generation here kind of just blowing this off, saying, well, we don't, you know, if you're younger, you don't really die of this. Your immune system can fight it off. And so who cares if we get it? So they're out there, you know, going to bars. And that's why many of the states had to close bars and restaurants. Not because they necessarily had to, if there was some responsible behavior. But we saw that we could not count on responsible behavior by people in their 20s and 30s to act responsibly. To realize that we're in a new situation here where you have to worry about other people. They weren't worried about other people. They wanted to go out on St. Patrick's Day and have fun and have party and drink. There was no social distancing. There was no worried about people coughing or sneezing on one another or being within 6 feet of each other. So what did the government have to do? They had to step in and say, okay, you're acting like children. We have to treat you like children. And now everybody has to. Remember in school, once again, we're back to grade school again. If one person ruins it, then they ruin it for the whole class. That was the rule. And that's where we're at now. The restaurants and bars didn't need to close, but they were forced to close by irresponsible, immature people who weren't thinking about anyone else but themselves. They were not thinking about that they could get the disease. In their minds, well, if I get it and I'll survive it, no big deal. Yeah, but you can also pass it on to your parents or to your grandparents or to someone else right next to you. That was the lesson that had to be hammered home, and I hope people are still getting it, are still understanding it. It's not just about you. So we're going through some major changes here. And as I said, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Hopefully, a whole new generation finally grows up and acts their age, because we've allowed people in their 20s to be referred to as kids. There used to be a time when you were 18. That was when you were an adult. Now adult is a verb. Oh, look at you acting like an adult. You're adulting. No, that's not a verb. You are an adult. It's a noun. Be one. And that's where we're at right now. We're going to have to change our behaviors. If there is some byproduct of this, I hope that the younger generation wakes up and realizes that they are a part of something bigger. Because that's what we've lost. We've lost communal experience and an appreciation for the larger. And so now this is a lesson that we're going to have to learn that may be hard, and we may sadly have to lose a lot of people in order to learn that. But that's going to be one of the lessons, hopefully. This is not a great time to be in. I'm not saying I'm glad this is happening. But you know what? We actually can use this as a positive for us to look in the mirror at ourselves, young or old, and decide, are we doing what's best for ourselves, or are we doing what's best for everyone else on this earth? Are we a single organism, or are we a part of something bigger? Are we all in this together? The answer is obvious. The goal is for more people to understand it, to accept it, and to act in a way that helps the larger good, not just your own. So there's going to be some behaviors, as I said. Are we going to keep shaking hands? I don't know. Are we going to be walking around with masks more? Are we going to be, is every restaurant and every public place now going to have sanitizers everywhere you look? Are people going to start to practice the hygiene that they were taught when they were five? Are they going to continue to implement that hygiene when they're adults? Because clearly that's been a major downfall here. Our lack of hygiene. So maybe we're going to be more cognizant to wash our hands, to make sure that we don't cough or sneeze out in the open, that at least we put our mouths and our faces in our, in our elbow when we're going to cough or we're going to sneeze. And if we do, we wash our hands. Is there going to be sanitizers everywhere? Is there going to be more of an awareness personally to wash our hands more? I hope so. Because that's what's spreading this. Hopefully the habits that we're having to readopt, because we did adopt them at one time. We were taught them when we were five. Somehow we got to be 18 and we all forgot them, apparently. But we have to readopt and adapt. But now, hopefully, are more people going to just be more hygienic overall? I hope that's a takeaway. I hope that's a lesson. This is a terrible thing we're in right now, and it's not over, and it's not even close to being over. And it may last 6 months, and it may last a year. We may still be doing this at Christmas time, folks. That's reality. Public officials don't want to tell you that because it might scare them. We'll be in Lord of the Flies and people will act irresponsibly because they'll have cabin fever and they'll just want to do what they used to do, and they'll just give in to the temptation of going back to their bad behaviors because I can't take it anymore. But that's the fear here. We can't do that. That will only keep this going on more. We have to resist the temptation. We have to accept this as a new normal, at least for the time being. And to do that worldwide is not an easy task because we are a very emotional and self-centered animal on this planet. We have to dig down deep, folks, and change our ways. Like I told you, this wasn't some weapon. This is that we built. And, the quicker that we recognize and accept the possible longevity of this, the better off we're going to be. This virus does not care how bored we are. This virus does not care how restless we are. This virus does not care how much we want to watch a basketball game or a hockey game or a baseball game or a football game or a horse race. This does not care how much we want to go and party with our friends. This virus does not care how much we want to go out and jog or run a marathon with other people. It doesn't care. And it doesn't care about a calendar. when you're hearing dates being thrown out of when this these things will be closed, those are just meant to appease us. First it was the end of March, then it's middle of April, then it's end of May, and then it's going to be the middle of July. This virus does not care about our calendars. This virus is going to either go away because it dies out on its own, or it's going to go away because we kill it. And in the meantime, while it's still alive, we have to do what we can to stop it spreading, because we can't stop it right now without that. That's where we're at. It's that simple. We are right now in a containment. We're not in a eradication period right now. We're at the very beginning of this entire marathon. We're in mile two of 26 miles. Ask anybody who runs a marathon. It's a long run, and we're only in the second mile. We're in containment. We're not in eradication yet. That's a vaccine. Hopefully the warm weather will slow this thing down, but that is not up to us. Once again, that's nature. That's our planet showing who's in charge. The planet itself may save us. All we have to do now is act responsible to stop it spreading, because we don't have any way to stop it except through our behavior. That's where we're at. We're at containment. It's all on us right now. It's all on us. We need to show our mettle for the first time in many decades. We haven't had to show our mettle in a while. It's been at least 20 years since 9/11, and that was just the United States. But the world needs to show its mettle. And I don't know if the world has shown its mettle since 1945 in World War II. It's been that long. So this is a test for the human race to see if it can band together and work together for the common good, as opposed to a country or a city or a neighborhood, or a family, or a person. We got to think bigger now, not just about ourselves. We haven't done that in a long, long time. You got to ultimately show some patience. This is not going to happen. This is not going to end quickly. Show some caution and responsibility of what you do on a daily basis, of how you act and what you do, as easy or as simple as when you sneeze or cough. That may seem like nothing in our lives now. That is the most important thing. We don't even think about when we sneeze or cough. And, you know, before this, now when we sneeze or cough, that's an event. It needs to be thought of as an event. Oh my gosh, I'm going to sneeze. Oh my gosh, I'm going to cough. If I'm within 6 feet of somebody, I better take some precautions. Whether I'm not even around somebody, we cannot treat a sneeze or a cough like it's just some mindless thing that we do. Now it's an event. It's potentially fatal. That's the kind of mindset we need. Patience. This is going to take time. Caution, prevention, responsibility for yourself and for the others around you. And lastly, resistance. Resist the temptation of your boredom and your cabin fever to do things that you want to do that may be dangerous to yourself or others in terms of spreading this disease. That one may be the most important and the most difficult. Because if this goes on for 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 months, people are going to be out of their minds. They'll accept some little temporary inconveniences, but can we hunker down for the long haul? I hope so. Because if after 2 or 3 months, if we start to see some flattening out, then we're going to go right back to what we used to do. And this and without a vaccine, it'll spread again. We don't want a second wave of this. That's the key. We're in the first wave and we're having troubles. If this goes away, we want to make sure it doesn't come back. We cannot go back to normal too fast. We cannot jump for joy with the first news of this slowing down. We can't then just run outside like it's 60 degrees on a February winter day where we wear our shorts and start jogging like, oh my God, I've had cabin fever. I can't wait anymore. We can't do that. We have to wait until this thing goes away. That's when normal starts again. And we don't know when normal starts again. I'm sorry if I'm not painting a bright picture here, but you know what? That's what needs to be said. We need to face the reality. And there is a whole generation here that has never heard bad news, who doesn't know how to deal with this because they were helicopter parented and they were shielded and lived in a bubble. And now their parents cannot be that bubble anymore. And some of these kids are like lambs to a slaughter because they were not prepared for the real world. And that's why they're acting irresponsible. Some major lessons have to be learned now. The world is forcing us to change and to grow up and to be responsible citizens and to think about the entire world and not just ourselves. That's the takeaway from this. At least it better be. Or this will happen again and it'll happen worse. That's why, and I'll leave you on this note, I wonder, can we just declare 2020 a do-over year? I mean, I feel sorry for 2020. We were all excited just what, 2 months ago when the new year was starting and with 2020. And I know it's not a new decade officially with the zeros and the ones. I get it. But it's a nice round number, 2020. We're all like, hey, new decade starting. Woohoo, let's go. And just as it got started, it's already got shut down. Everything is going to have an asterisk after it that happened in 2020. I'm gonna say this, and I'm sorry, but you know there's not going to be any more NBA season this year. You know that, right? You know there's not going to be any more hockey season this year, right? You know there's a good chance that baseball, if it even does play this summer, may not start until maybe even July. That's a big asterisk. Is that even a season? All these different things are going to be pushed back or canceled. Marathons and sporting events and everything. Our entire schedule is going to be pushed back, and we still don't even know when. So this year just seems like it needs a do-over. 2020 didn't even get a chance. So I say, as I said before about calendars, at the end of the day, we do run the calendar, right? So why can't we just, when we, and I believe we're going to get through this. So let's say in 6 or 7 or 8 months, this finally goes away and it doesn't come back. And we just breathe a sigh of relief and we say, wow, and remember that. Can't we just, call the United Nations together at the end of December, get all the nations of all the world together, and just decide it's our calendar. It's not heaven sent. We created this. Can't we just do 2020 over again? Can't we just declare a do-over? And so when the year changes on January 1st, that will be 2020. And give 2020 a chance to be a full year with all that a year should have, good and bad. Because right now, 2020 never had a chance. It just started and all of a sudden it had its legs cut out right in front of it, just as it was starting. For all we know, the Romans did this in like 37 or 38 AD. Maybe they had a bad year and they just said, you know what? We're going to call it 37 AD again. How do we know? We don't know. It could just be our little secret, our 21st century secret. We're just going to do this year over again because it just didn't have a chance to even get started. It's a big asterisk year. We'll all remember it, and then time will forget it. But, you know, I think 2020 deserves a fair shot. It didn't get a fair shot at all. Within a month and a half, it was already clouded, and within 3 months, it's lost all its potential. So that's my hope for the year. My hope for the year is to let the year start over again next year. Let's give 2020 another shot. Don't you think? 2020 and the human race, after all this is done, deserves a mulligan. And so ends another episode, in fact, episode 200 of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. If you've been around for all 200 episodes, your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. And if you've only been around for 2 episodes, thank you for listening. And don't forget, you can go back and listen to all the previous ones at WGNplus.com in the podcast section, and you'll see a prompt for Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, where you can get all up to date. It's some great things to occupy your time during a life shutdown. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic from the end of the world, and that's the way it seems like these days, right to your town. Stay strong. Stay healthy.